From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Several of you are making an appearance on the show today. That's right. This is our weekly listener mail segment where we hear directly from you. And so far, the only complaint that we have amongst ourselves about the show is that this segment can't get to everything that we hear from our fellow listeners every week, which is what corporate America would call a good problem to have. Don't you think, guys?
For sure.
I just love corporate America and all their useful buzz phrases.
What is a wheelhouse? You know, I've been keeping for, God, I've been doing this for more than a decade now, I think. And I've been keeping a reference guide to corporate buzz terms. And some of them are so bizarre, like phrases like eat our own dog food.
That's I don't know that one. Yeah, one that always makes me cringe is let's take a peek under the kimono.
Yeah, it's gross. I actually used that line in a, well, our bosses don't listen to this show, so I'm fine to say this. I used to sit during meetings, Matt, you know this, and take random lines of statements from people at the meetings and compose them into poems. The way that you've seen, like, maybe some artists did that with George W. Bush and stuff, and the kimono line stuck out to me.
We made a whole YouTube series, Trapped in a Meeting, remember? That was Ben. It was basically poetry of corporate speak.
Connell, by the way, is a great improviser.
He absolutely is. Although, wasn't it always the same footage in every single one of those videos of him like doing the presentation?
No, we shot an entire, I think it was hour long meeting or something that then we just spliced up into all the episodes.
Two hours, maybe.
Yeah, it was long.
Got it. By the way, a wheelhouse is a part of a boat that's like the shelter.
Don't tell me.
No, don't ruin it.
Mystery ruined. I don't want to hear it. I like that you've got to have something to wake up for in the morning. I like what's life without a little bit of mystery.
It's a house shaped like a wheel. It's not.
Spoiler.
I'm just adding to the mystery. I'm adding new input to the mystery.
Oh, man. It's good that we're starting out with some levity today because the listener mail and correspondence that we're exploring touches on some heavy, heavy things. To be honest with you, we've got some scientific mysteries. We've got some ongoing horrible things, both in the U.S. and across the world. Where should we begin? Noel, if you feel good about it, you wanna do the honors and kick us off with the email that you found. This is one of like a surge of emails we got too, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel good about it exactly, but I will definitely do this thing. This email, emailer asked to remain anonymous for some pretty obvious reasons that you will shortly understand. And this was a response to Matt's strange news story from last week about Paris Hilton and her troubled upbringing being kind of taken to these sort of like boot camps or sort of, I guess, I don't know, rehab type things, not necessarily for drugs, but just for like bad behavior.
Like detention centers.
Troubled children. That's right. But these are not detention centers and that they're not like mandated by the law, right? These are like, you pay for these. These are private companies that do these, you know, sort of crash course kind of things for profit, right? And that is specifically what this email is about. And the reason our listener asked to remain anonymous, because she has had firsthand knowledge of this stuff. It's a little long. I'm going to read some excerpts, but mainly I think it's all worth hearing. And then we can have a little discussion about it. Good morning, gentlemen. I listened to the story Matt told about Paris Hilton, her story of the troubled child industry. That's what it's called, I guess, from those working inside of it. And since I was recently a science teacher at one of their schools, I thought I would touch base with y'all about my experience with it because I'm a certified teacher now in the public school system. I asked that my anonymity be honored. The first thing I thought you should know is that when they kidnap the kids, they call it gooning. G-O-O-N-I-N-G. And the stories my students told me about it were horrible. After the girls in our program were gooned, they would be taken to a wilderness program where they did intense therapy while living outdoors in the wilderness all seasons, usually in the Idaho or Utah mountains. They would learn meditation, do therapy, and learn survival skills like how to start a fire and carve a spoon. Not all of our girls did wilderness, but the ones who didn't were rare. Once the girls were done with that program, usually 3 to 6 months, sometimes more and sometimes less, their recruiter would have a school or other program lined up. They have a recruiter or handler who works with their family through the system, who guides them through a series of programs, usually all run under a single umbrella corporation, like Interchange or Embark. Brokers get a cut. And this is this listener's opinion or an assumption she's making based on her experience in the industry. But she says she assumes the longer that the children are into the program, the more programs they do, the bigger the cut the broker gets. Let me tell you why I think this industry is disgusting and predatory. Once at the school, the clients are in a system that requires them to check boxes to graduate. They move through a series of steps where privileges are gained or lost based on their conformity. Wow. The stated goal is that they are improving in therapy, but that's frankly bullshit. Since I was merely the science teacher and the 10 years of work I did in the therapeutic community meant nothing. I was regularly ignored by the many therapists who run around like demagogues, making arbitrary decisions about the lives of our population. Our girls had classes 4 days a week all year long and were pulled from class so often for therapy to speak to prospective families, convincing them to bring their kids to our, oh, wow. Literally pulled from class to be kind of trotted out as examples, speaking to prospective families about their positive experiences or whatever, what have you.
Yikes.
Prospective families, convincing them to bring their kids to our program, to do commercials, to talk to the program's director, or just because someone wanted to take them somewhere for some BS arbitrary reason, it made me so uncomfortable I blacklisted my classes, forcing the therapist to remove them from other classes. They kind of listened sometimes. I didn't feel comfortable giving the girls grades because they weren't getting through enough of the standards. I was considered the strictest teacher on campus. There were a whole six of us because I made them do actual work and did actual lessons. I barely had the materials I needed, and our books were so out of date, my chemistry book was missing 18 elements on the periodic table. I was also a therapist, a safe space, and a mom to many of the girls. Girls ran. They self-harmed. They refused to eat. They had real issues that didn't seem to ever be truly addressed in a meaningful way. I'm still in contact with a bunch of my girls and know I had a positive impact, but the company hated me from minute one, in part because our installation in particular is run by and employs a lot of strict Mormon members, and I don't care about towing their arbitrary gender roles. I hated that job. It almost killed me. And when they fired me at the end of the last year, I already had a new job lined up. Anyway, I won't go into the accreditation process we went through while I was there. It was laughable, she says, because I've written so much already. I'm willing to answer any questions I can, if you have any. I think it would be a good idea for you guys to do an episode on the industry. It's predatory and scary how we treat kids in this country, especially at these and other types of private institutions.
Wow. Yeah. It's tough to hear from an educator who is within the system, who saw all the problems inside, who knew the children who were involved had real problems that weren't being addressed, because that's the whole point of this system, right? Or at least that's right. The stated goal. Mm-hmm. When it does feel like maybe the true goal is more about conformity to norms and to accepting authority.
Yeah.
Maybe those are closer to the actual goals.
I would argue the actual goals are simply and solely profit and avoiding prosecution.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that, but I guess I'm trying to imagine from the, how you could get away with it for long enough without having some kind of stated goal that the parents in some way I agree with, like it was mm-hmm. worth it to send my child there basically. Right. And I think conformity is probably the biggest thing, like breaking down a child's free will to a certain
compliance.
Extent.
Compliance. Let's say compliance.
Compliance.
Maybe.
That's a good one.
That's what, I mean, that's something that many institutions are founded entirely on. Law enforcement, the military, religion. They're founded on conformity and compliance. I appreciate that you read the entirety of the email because it's indicative of the vast amount of correspondence that we've received here, not just email, but I'm sure that we've all had people personally reaching out to us in this regard. One of the things we said is we do want to make an episode about this. The further down the rabbit hole I've gone since we did that episode, I don't know about you guys, the more disturbing stuff I found. Judicial corruption runs rampant, sometimes functioning hand in hand with these private institutions. The victims, and I do think victims is a fair word in many cases, are dealing with lifelong PTSD, trauma of these experiences. And the problem is that, again, I think the main issue here is that there is not oversight of any substantive form. I greatly appreciate this email from you, Anonymous, because I think you're giving a startling look into something that's more common than people realize. And the thing I've been struggling with, and again, I don't know about you guys, just speaking for myself, is remembering that logically, these are not all terrible places, right? Some of them are helping people. Just to finish that thought.
No, they're not all terrible places. And also, let's not forget that, you know, there are children that this isn't just run-of-the-mill bad behavior, like parents just like shoving their kids off because they don't want to deal with disciplining them. I mean, typically we are talking about things like self-harm, you know, severe depression, suicidal ideations, like things like that, that are beyond the scope of things that parents can handle. And of course, you know, it is a luxury for some parents to be able to afford to send their kids to places like this. And certainly there are probably a range of facilities that are, you know, vouched for more than others. And I'm sure the cost rises accordingly. But you're right, Ben. I see what you're saying, and I agree. It's not to throw all sort of, I guess you call it like sleepaway therapy situations under the bus, but it certainly does seem like the lack of oversight, the lack of proper accreditation could cause some real problems, I think, and that's clear from this and other emails we've gotten around this subject.
Well, yeah, and speaking of those other emails, we've had so many people write to us to say that what ended up sending them or what ended up getting them into one of these places was trauma that occurred to them. A lot of times it was abuse by someone around them before ever entering the facility, and the facility is meant to assist the student, the child, in dealing with the trauma that they've experienced. And only to arrive at a place to have further, even worse trauma inflicted upon them. That's what makes, I think, this so egregious. And again, that is not in every instance. And as we're seeing here from our anonymous emailer, there are good individuals that exist within the ecosystem of even the worst schools. There have to be good individuals in there who see what's happening, want to change it, and maybe can't change it. It's just we have to remember all the sides of this. It's horrifying. It's horrifying, and I'm not looking forward to making this a full episode. But I think it's very important, and we should, and we will. We keep saying that we will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is we to our credit, we only said it in that first strange news and today. So, and we do put in the research time with this, at the risk of sounding like it's all gloom and doom here. I don't know about you guys, but I always feel like we're on the right track when I get the feeling that that I don't want us to do something, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Because that's the reason this show exists.
Completely agree.
Not to just, I don't know. We do fun stuff too, right? There are a lot of, like, Bernays is still fun, even though a lot of people died because of him.
By the way, this is a little behind the curtain, but if any of you have noticed, we have been doing some more paranormal stuff recently, some more things that are, I don't know, more, I dislike the word fun, just more mysteriously, esoteric, mysteriously entertaining, I think. And I would just say on my part, it's because personally, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed with everything that's happening. And this is giving me great joy to explore some of those other topics. And thinking about something as messed up and dire as this topic, it just is giving me anxiety, further anxiety.
Totally. I'm with you while we're staying backstage. I miss it because that kind of stuff is the soul of the show. And it's easy to drift away, but this is critical thinking applied to the paranormal and conspiracies. And to like say otherwise is to lose sight of the reason we started, you know? I mean, this is, in many cases, the troubled teen industry is itself conspiratorial, right? They are conspiring to goon these kids. They're conspiring, in some cases, to cover up abuse, right? And again, it's too broad a brush to say that that's happening in every single institution every single day. But the things that we have found that our fellow listeners have shared with us are immensely compelling. Like there is something rotten in the Denmark of the troubled teen industry.
What an odd term, though, using goon. I think of goon squads as like a group of mercenaries or something, or, you know, criminals that are going to attack you with billy clubs. It's odd that they would choose to use that term as like an industry insider word.
I highly doubt that's on many memos. I think it's probably nomenclature that's just spoken about by the people who do it.
What are they going to say? Press gang? Like the British Empire of old?
It's a good point. I actually found a piece in the New York Times from 2016 called Therapy Becomes Theater in Wilderness. And it was about a person who basically converted their like experience in this therapy type of program into a theater piece, but the word gooning is used in this as well. And it is a thing. So yeah, I think maybe more to this discussion another time, in a full episode, I think to back you guys up, that makes perfect sense. And thank you so much for the insider perspective on this, from our anonymous listener.
Yes. And look, seriously, keep in mind, there's going to be an entire nonfiction documentary series about a specific school coming out next year from my slate. So we'll talk about that in further detail, too.
And in the interim, please keep the correspondence coming. We very much want to hear from you.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with some more listener mail.
And we're back. We're going to hear a message from someone named Bob. Here it is.
Yeah, hey, it's Bob from Northern Canada. And I was just listening to the podcast about solar flare, something like that. And I seem to remember back in the 90s, our phones got knocked out at work. And our phones stopped working for like a day, something like that. And they all chalked it up to solar flares. Do you remember that? Back in the 90s? Maybe it was the early aughts. Anyways, I didn't think about that until now. And I thought that would be worth bringing up again. But really appreciate the podcast and keep up the good work. All right. Take care, bros.
Okay, Bob. Solar flares. Maybe you don't know this, but solar flares, solar activity, coronal mass ejections, that's one of our favorite topics on this show. It's one of my personal favorite things to be fearful of and aware of.
Nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. The power of the sun. It controls us in so many ways. Here we go. I did a bit of research behind this outside of what we've already talked about on our show when it comes to mass excitability with the sun. I think that's probably the episode you listened to, Bob. And found a couple of things. There's an NOAA article that I found here that talks about five times where solar activity affected life on Earth in a negative way. A lot of times it had to do with technology. And I don't know if this is the actual thing that occurred that you're thinking about, but I'm going to tell you something that occurred on March 10th, 1989. So almost the 90s. It's really close. Okay, so there was a powerful coronal mass eruption on the sun, and there was a flare. The outburst caused shortwave radio interference. It jammed signals from Radio Free Europe, which is something we've talked about before on this show. It's a government-funded organization that broadcasts uncensored news and information to audiences in countries where it's banned by the government. It's a bit of an intelligence operation there. Some people thought it was the Russians doing this. And it's really interesting because you imagine the sun is so far away. When there's a CME, or a coronal mass ejection, or a solar flare, or something like that, that energy is getting pulsed out. And if it's aimed towards the Earth, it takes a while to hit us. When it did hit us on March 12th, it caused northern lights to be seen as far south as Florida and Cuba, which is crazy to think about. Like, that must have been just a massive solar storm there. Created all kinds of electrical currents in the ground, affected much of North America. And then on March 13th in the morning, it affected a weak section of the electrical power grid in Quebec, Canada, and caused the entire city's power grid to go down. It was a blackout that lasted for 12 hours. Millions of people were affected by it. There were other cities also within the United States up in that northern territory area that were affected by the solar storm. There were over 200 power grid problems within minutes of this thing actually impacting the Earth across the country. Really fascinating stuff just to imagine that the sun can have a bit of a burp. A large belch, and it can affect us in this way. And I guess the good thing is that it can do much more damage than that. And it wasn't a worse situation.
Right. Cause the sun is a sphere, and these CMEs, coronal mass ejections, that's what was responsible in 1989, as you mentioned, Matt. I think we did a YouTube video about at least how it affected Quebec. But the since the sun is a sphere, these CMEs come from a direction that launches from a specific point on that sphere. They don't just emanate from the whole thing. So that means there are CMEs that could be tremendously, potentially catastrophic, and they just shoot out into empty space because we're like on the other side of the solar neighborhood, which is lucky, but also kind of frightening because we're basically playing a game of solar Russian roulette. You know what I mean? At some point, that's a variable. The gun, quote unquote, in some ways, going to be loaded. And I remember all those years ago, this is something I had not really been aware of until you introduced me to it, Matt. One thing I found that was interesting in response to Bob's correspondence here is, Bob, I really want to know specifically where you were.
Yeah, I know.
Because it turns out that due to some factors we might not consider, some areas, at least in the U.S., some areas of the world presumably are more vulnerable in general than others, like the Midwest and Eastern Seaboard in the U.S., almost entirely because of the electric grid, is much more vulnerable to these sorts of effects. But the science is there. I mean, CMEs can knock out electric grids, but they can also interfere with the energy that your phone has to use to communicate.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. There's even more that we could touch on with the Quebec blackout, but of 89. But it's really creepy. It became kind of legendary when it, at least according to NASA, when it comes to electrical engineers, and space scientists who were just trying to figure out, okay, how do we prevent this from happening in the future? How do we secure all of this infrastructure to make sure when this happens again, we don't have a blackout that lasts for half a day or a full day or weeks or months? Because have no doubt, if there's a large enough coronal mass ejection that reaches Earth, that is aimed at Earth and reaches Earth, it can fry the entire electrical grid of the planet, at least the sun facing part, as well as, you know, it just depends on a lot of variables, but it could have a major effect to the point where electrical wires themselves get fried and imagine the power grid near your house. If you've got telephone lines or something that have electricity running through them, through the wires, imagine all of that frying. But then imagine that not just in your neighborhood, but in your entire city or your entire state, and how long it would take for the city or state or even the federal government to replace all of that infrastructure to get power back.
Oh, dude, think how long it takes sometimes to even just like reset a power, you know, a brownout or something like on in a neighborhood. Like, I can't imagine the logistics of doing something on that scale.
I mean, we'd hit the road territory pretty fast, I think. That's just my
thinking. For a time we would, but there's another factor that we have to consider here, and this is going again, Bob. I don't mean to sound like I'm stalking you, but let me know where you're located, because some areas of the world have what could best be described as terrible geological luck. They have electrically resistive rock, or more so than normal. So this would be like igneous metamorphic formations. And when we're talking about high voltage electrical components and wires in those parts of the world or those parts of this country, that means they're more vulnerable to geomagnetic disturbances from not even CMEs, just solar flares. And
yeah.
Engineers are aware of this and they want to plan for it. But the tough part is, you know, funding gets cut for infrastructure all the time, right? The U.S. infrastructure is crumbling in parts of this country. Everything from the bridges to infamously the levees to the electricity grid. It's no different. So imagine you're the engineer and you have to come in and say, look, I know the project is supposed to cost X amount of dollars over Y amount of years, but we need Z amount of extra funding to make sure that the sun doesn't like pop a sniper headshot at us and plunge New York into darkness. Maybe New York would have the money to listen, but a lot of smaller towns aren't going to do, like, how are you going to convince, I'm just going to make up a small town. Apologies if I'm accidentally naming yours, folks. How are you going to convince the people of, Mountain Foot Hog Swallow, West Dakota. There we go. I made it safe because that's not a real state. how are you going to convince them to spend the cash on something as a contingency for something that really may never happen on a reasonable scale? You have to try, because you're going to be public enemy number one if this kind of thing happens, because people, as we've seen during blackouts, the social covenant that we have with each other is very fragile. It entirely depends on two things. One, basic human decency, and two, the fear of consequences. When you remove number two, number one doesn't seem as powerful as it did when the lights were working.
Whoa. Yeah, totally. Dude. So, hey, in conclusion, Bob, we don't know what exactly you mean, what was happening. By the way, I edited that a little bit, what you just heard. He mentions BlackBerries, that I think the entire office was using BlackBerries. So I did a bit of research trying to find a time when the network that BlackBerry uses went down in the area where he was describing, and I could not find anything that correlated. So again, if you get more info, Bob, please email us this time, just because we know your voice. We know what's going on. If you want to give us more context, shoot us an email and we'll try and track some of this down. In the meantime, do your own research if you can on the 1859 solar flare that was observed and the resulting solar storm and what happened to telegraph systems across the planet. Really interesting stuff.
Oh, I don't know if I should put this out there, but it may be of interest to some of our fellow listeners. If you are in a situation where you don't want cellular devices to work around you for whatever reason, for a given amount of time, then with a little bit of research, it's fairly simple to build your own handheld kind of EM, like jammer system.
What?
You can fit it in an Altoid tent.
Oh, wow.
This is not sponsored by Altoids.
Show me this, Ben.
maybe off air. But it's weird because I found out about it years ago when Altoids was asking the successful shows on our network to talk about what they call Tinnovations.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, I was thinking, how can we figure out something that we could do with this that would work for stuff they don't want you to know? And then that was the answer I found. You can build a small enough one to fit in an Altoids tent.
Is this like an EMP kind of situation, or is this different?
Yeah, it is. This would be an EMP jammer. Do have to point out, maybe one of the reasons Altoids passed on it is that technically, from what I understand, it is illegal in the U.S. if you're not a government official. So I guess we cannot legally tell you that it is very, very easy to build one. We cannot legally say that you could go online and in a very short amount of time find both the guide to making it and the components you would need.
We would never.
Well, suggest such. Certainly don't send me a link, Ben. Whatever you do.
I would certainly never on air say that I will send you a link after we record.
Well, thank goodness.
It's really important to have boundaries, you guys.
It's true.
All right. Hey, I think this ends our discussion for now. Bob, thank you so much for calling in. We hope we gave you something helpful. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
And we're back. Our next piece of listener correspondence comes from a person we'll call A, who reached out via Twitter. A reached out to us a while back, earlier this month, to ask us to cover a little more about the situation in Nigeria, which hopefully you have heard about, because a lot of mass media outlets finally got it together and started reporting on these enormous protests. So I'm going to read just a little bit of what A wrote, and then we'll give more examination of the lay of the land. So A is based in Nigeria, by the way. A says, the protests nationwide have been peaceful so far. That is, until the police began shooting live ammunition and tear gas into the crowd. He's alluding to protests that are largely centered on the abolition of something called SARS, not the disease. SARS is an acronym standing for the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. So that's the SARS we're talking about today, a Nigerian police force unit created back in 1992. On paper, they were supposed to deal with crimes associated with robbery, grand theft auto or motor vehicle theft, kidnapping, illegal firearms, cattle rustling, that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, it turns out that they were committing crimes, at least as often as they were ostensibly preventing them. So in asking A about what the protests were about, because at the time you reached out to us, this was not widely reported in Western media, A said that they're ultimately pushing for the disbandment of SARS, which I believe has occurred, and also pushing for actual lasting reform. A says the issue here is that in Nigeria, saying whoosh, whoosh, reform means we'll shuffle our feet a bit, wait for tensions to die down, and then forget everything. And it'll be back to business as usual. Also, A says something that may be of interest to our listeners not based in Nigeria. It says, first, the police have a really bad reputation here. Bribery, extortion, brutality are very common traits. Police work well for the rich. They get these guys as escorts to accompany them on the road. The ones who aren't lucky to be escorts, apparently it's very lucrative for them, do stop and search on the roads. This is where a lot of extortion takes place. Drivers are forced to drop a little something for them before they're allowed to pass. And sometimes they go out of their way to do this preemptively because it's so expected. Like, you travel with the bribe in hand. Police detain people without evidence. Bail is not free. A goes on to say, I've heard stories of people who got charged with crimes they didn't commit and had just been spirited away to police cells. Recently, during the protests, one police officer shot another one while they were shooting live ammunition to dispel protesters. A protester got picked up and was charged with the murder of that police officer. It took a lot of effort to get that protester released, and this was after he was physically assaulted and being taken to a federal prison. This is one of many similar crimes. And then A is quick to say, now there, of course, there might be a few specks of good cops here and there, but that's just it. Recent research has shown that police in Nigeria are largely underpaid. This may be a motivating factor, but still isn't a good reason to cause the havoc they have been wreaking on Nigerians. They're still victims of a failed system, and their anger is, if that is what it can be called, is directly at the wrong place. So, A, you make an interesting point. You're saying that the police in some way may also be victims of this, of a broken system. And that's something we talked about in our earlier Strange News episode when we were talking about the ethics of fraudulent CARES Act claims under Nuke Bizzle, or Nuke Bizzle's fraudulent claims.
I love the idea of under Nuke Bizzle, like as though he's some sort of a politician or like a regime. The Nuke Bizzle, right. Under the Nuke Bizzle regime.
Under the Nuke Bizzle SoundCloud administration. Yes, that's indeed. Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about SARS for a little bit. So in the interim between when A wrote to us and when we recorded this episode, all of a sudden, it seemed, international media companies began to care about what was happening in Nigeria, by which I mean they began to report about it. The BBC, Al Jazeera, New York Times, I believe, has a piece. But this has been happening for... unfortunately, for quite a while, and it's not, I would advance that it was reaching the West first in terms of via Twitter, right? Twitter is doing a lot of reporting these days because it doesn't have some of the same filters, right, that mainstream media has in place. And that's a powerful thing, and arguably, but it's not necessarily always a good thing because mainstream journalism has filters. Some of the filters they have in place include things like vetting information, confirming sources.
Yeah.
And Twitter's primary filter is, do you have a Twitter account and a connection to the internet, which is not the same. But here's what's happening. Like we see tweets, like one from December 5th, 2017, where someone says, a friend just called me now, a distress call. Along a know-how road, he encountered SARS, and they wanted 50K, but all he had was 30K. So he's calling to get 20K from me to pay them off. He was just driving back from work. So these, like, imagine being snatched out of your car, being gooned out of your car, and being shaken down for a bribe. Bribes are, so these are what we would call often street level bribes, right? Victimizing the community one is supposed to serve and protect.
Yeah.
These are extremely common in lots of other parts of the world. In Guatemala, one of the euphemisms, I'm sure we mentioned this before, but in Guatemala, one of the euphemisms is like, if a cop is shaking down a tourist or someone or anybody on the roads, then they'll say something like, well, you know, maybe we can make this not such a big deal. You know, I could use a little extra money for chiclets. the chicle tree is in Guatemala, and chiclets are popular. So you just, you're like, oh, I'm just helping this guy, give him some money for some gum. You know what I mean? That's not a bribe. That's just two fans of gum celebrating life. But there are also, you know, you hear all kinds of euphemisms from law enforcement around the world, like a little taste. You know what I mean? It's just not, I think in the US, we're often blind to this because we don't see low-level bribes happening as often in the United States. If they do, it's not a, necessarily a small financial sum. It's something like sexual favors or drugs in kind. But that's not to say our system isn't corrupt. It's just the entry price of a successful bribe tends to be much higher.
That's right. And it's certainly not just like a common parlance that like you can, okay, I can get out of this ticket by, you know, rubbing together a $20 bill, huh? How about my friend George Washington here says that you didn't pull me over.
Well, it's this may be controversial, and I'm sorry in advance, but it may seem to some, like it does to me, that the bribes have just been made official in the United States. The bribe is now no longer the money changing hands between an officer or two officers and a victim of the who's being forced to do this. It is now an official statute for a parking violation or a speeding ticket or some other thing that you have to pay several hundred dollars to the county for.
Or like bail.
Or bail.
Mm-hmm. Or lobbying. Lobbying is weird. No one ever talks about lobbying.
Oh, man. No, all of that stuff feels like essentially codified bribery, like especially when it's not even based in government. Like in Atlanta here, we have a company that will boot your car if you're parked in an unauthorized place, and that's based on, I guess, who owns the lot and, you know, some signage or whatever. But it's not even the city. It's this third-party company that then puts like a boot on your car and a sticker on your window with a number to call. So that like the person can show up with a credit card machine that you can then swipe to get your car back. It's basically like unlawful seizure of your property without due process, you know?
And they're on commission.
100%.
Yeah. And I think, was it you, Noel, who like got booted one time at my old apartment?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go out there, and I had to
I don't quite remember what the circumstances were, but I do. This is all coming back. This is not. Yeah. This is not what I was describing, because this what I'm describing happened to me another time in Atlanta's little Five Points area, where I parked at a Starbucks and I got a coffee, and then I walked over to a record store. When I came back 10 minutes later, my car was booted, and there was a sticker on the window. And they literally roll up with like a machine. It's like you know, holding your car hostage. But yeah, I do remember. Did I leave it overnight or something? Or
I can't remember, but I had to go out there.
You did.
I had to go out there and talk to him. But we managed to resolve that because we weren't dealing with some entity like SARS.
Yes.
So the End SARS campaign picked up a lot of steam recently. In this month in particular, in October as we record this, because a police officer in SARS shot a young man in front of a hotel in the Delta State, and the video became the watershed moment, right? It became the Malcolm Gladwell-esque tipping point for the nation. It started trending on social media, and within a matter of days, there were nationwide protests. They expanded, like it started with hashtags, right? As many things do. And then it became something that was in city streets throughout the country. Prominent, notable activists, celebrities were joining this, raising awareness of the protest, because SARS was capable of victimizing people from all walks of life in the country with impunity. And they were noticed to be very violent. Like, that's part of why even Nigerian celebrities joined in. But when these protests occurred, the response was from authorities was massively violent. We already mentioned live ammunition, like you pointed out to us. People were also beaten chased away. However, at this point, there is good news. Just on October 11th, not that long ago, the Inspector General of the Police, one Mohammed Adamu, announced that they were disbanding SARS. They were disbanding the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. I said this on live television, but to the point we made earlier, they also said a new tactical team will be unveiled.
Yeah.
Shortly.
Yeah. Can we talk just briefly about how SARS began and what they used to do, what it was?
Yeah, absolutely. 1992, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned that already, 1992. It started out as essentially an undercover operation. There were literally 15 individual officers in two vehicles that would go around and they would do covert operations where essentially they're listening to radios, they're picking up signals from people on the road who are, you know, as they ride around to catch criminals. And they're not going in to arrest somebody immediately. They're doing surveillance essentially. And they didn't even carry weapons out in the open. They weren't in clothes, like in any kind of official insignia or outfits. And that was essentially their role. And it began expanding from there in 92 for the first decade. That's essentially what they're doing, but it was expanding. But after that first decade, around 2002, is when they began officially going after murderers, kidnappers, assassins, and all of these other, you know, violent criminals. And this is when, at least according to Al Jazeera and in their reports, this is when those roadblocks started happening that you were talking about, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Matt. I want to step back a little bit. It's in the mid-90s, to our knowledge, when members of SARS started committing extrajudicial murders that we can trace clearly. They arrested in 1996, they arrested these two security guards who were suspected of being the inside heist members of a robbery. The guards were not charged with a crime. And in January of the next year, their bodies were just put in a morgue without any explanation of what happened to them. In SARS custody, in case we need to put a fine point on that. And you're right. You're right, Matt. They started covertly. They started covertly out of what was arguably necessity. You know, the Nigerian army and the Nigerian police force were at odds, right? And so the problem is that it seems they went to a place where they were existing beyond the law. And it's tough to pinpoint the exact moment where that kind of corruption occurs. You know, it's not like people in the police force get together, have a meeting and say, all right, school's out. We're going to be like Homelander and the Boys. We're going to do whatever we want. It just, the rules gradually erode until they are completely washed away.
Oh, that doesn't feel dire or awful at all, he said sarcastically.
However, there is good news because, you know, the protest accomplished one of the primary aims, which is to disband this force. And it's not disbanding the entirety of the police force. Obviously, it's disbanding SARS. And SARS hasn't been around forever. 1992 was not that long ago. It's longer than some of our fellow listeners might think, but it wasn't that long ago. So with this, we see a couple of things. Maybe, I guess the inspiring idea is that we see a case where a protest was focused and worked, you know. But to your question, A, we have to ask ourselves, is this lasting reform? Are the teams that grow to fulfill the same duties that SARS was meant to fulfill, are they going to be able to hold the line? Are they going to end up breaking the same laws they're there to enforce? Who watches the watchmen? Who polices the police?
And aren't they still actually shooting protesters as of like the day before we're recording this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a show that I like to watch every day, if I haven't recommended it, I will now. It's Democracy Now. It's a daily, you know, streaming news show, and they cover things like this that often don't get coverage on other networks. And yes, there are protests around this, and there was a situation just a few days ago where these forces fired live ammunition into a crowd of protesters. So it's absolutely still a thing.
Hey Ben, I love that I'm nagging you now, Noel. I love that Noel has just discovered Democracy Now.
No, I'm not. I haven't just discovered
I'm
it.
I'm just joking.
I haven't just discovered it.
I'm completely joking.
Something that I start my day out with, and I've gotten back into in this crazy news cycle where there's so much misinformation. I've always relied on them, and I really enjoy their reporting, and just got back into it. And they are reporting this a story very regularly.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And quote name Doc Holliday, I think you make a tremendous point, and I appreciate it because you are correct. And it wasn't just a couple of people. A dozen protesters in Nigeria have apparently been killed by security forces after the October 11th disbandment, which means that disbanding SARS is not ending the problem of law enforcement attacking civilians, because these are civilians. You know what I mean? They're not militarized. They're protesting, and protests can turn violent. But as A said, the majority of these protests, when they started out, they were peaceful. It was the police who fired first.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I know that this happened I don't remember exactly which day it was, but certainly this week, there's this image that's become sort of iconic within this movement, you know, because I've seen a lot of pictures and video on the ground from this of, you know, somebody being shot, and they were, in order to stop the bleeding, somebody wrapped their leg or side in a Nigerian flag. And so there's blood all over this flag. And then you can see pictures of where they hung up this Nigerian flag with, you know, protesters' blood on it. And people have been passing that image around a lot.
Unfortunately, that means we have to end this this story on in media res. We have to end it before the story has concluded. We know that there are multiple protests here. We know that the national government has been more or less silent on this point, on these deaths. And as we're recording this, we're waiting to hear more. You can see some televised statements from officials who are saying that they are investigating the, I think the phrase they use is rules of engagement that law enforcement has chosen to deploy. But that is very different from saying don't shoot citizens. I think we can agree.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
on a high note, just because that's a really, really difficult and important point for us to end on a lighter note, Phil Collins may get his mansion back. Apparently, he's asked people to help him, like his ex-wife and someone are in an armed occupation of the mansion.
What?
So he might get his mansion back. I don't know. That doesn't really...
Oh, man.
That's not the positive note I was looking for.
Oh, I just want him to write a song about it.
I want him to do an album of all Steely Dan covers called Steel Collins. Or a classics compilation called Still Collins. These are all terrible.
No, I think you mean terribly amazing and gold.
Comedy. So this is our show. Thank you to A. Thank you to Bob. Thank you, Anonymous. As we said, these are heavy topics.
Yeah,
they are important. And we want to explore them further. We need your help. You can find us all over the internet. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We like to recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy on Facebook. There will be a quiz. However, never fear. It's very easy. You simply have to name one of us or codename Doc Holliday or Mission Control. Give us a joke that tickles us. Point out a terrible pun. Just say something that say something that gives us some light in these dark times, or, you know, just point out something that lets us know you listen to the show, and boom, you're in what has often been called new improved version of the Illuminati by us one time. Right now.
Yes.
That's all it takes, you know? Just a single spark can start a fire.
That's right.
A movement, even.
A movement.
Well, how else can people get in touch with us? How can people reach out through the void that is the internet to communicate with us?
Use your phone. It's pretty cool. You can use VoIP, too, if you got that Skype thing on your computer. You just dial 1-833-STDWYTK. You will get a voicemail. You will hear Mr. Ben Bolin, the one that we call Ben. He will talk to you, an automated version of him, and then you can leave a message, and you tell us whatever you want. Make sure to let us know if we can use it on the air or not in one of these episodes. That's highly important. Hey guys, can I do the fastest shout out really fast to a project that a few of us are working on?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, please.
Okay, I'm gonna go with Ben's answer.
Cool.
Ben and I have been working on a show, and Noel, it's not to exclude you, but it's a show called 13 Days of Halloween that is available right now, and it is a fiction horror anthology show brought to you by Aaron Mankey of Lore. And Blumhouse, the people who brought you Get Out and Invisible Man and a ton of other amazing movies and television shows.
Don't forget about Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island. There's all kinds of amazing stuff that they do. Well, guess what? They are making this show, and Ben and I happen to be a part of the creation of the show. And Ben's voice is going to be in it as one of the actors, and two of his stories that he wrote are in it. And I get to direct and be co-creator of the whole thing. But
yeah, Matt made the show. Guys.
But yeah, but
Matt actually made the show.
But I couldn't have made it without the amazing writers and actors who are a part of it. Ben, thank you so much. You kicked butt on this. And the best thing is, if you like Key and Peele, and you know what that is, Keegan-Michael Key is actually playing the main character, is what I will call him, in this show. So check it out if you like any of that stuff, if you're feeling Halloween-y, 13 Days of Halloween. Okay, that's
Halloween-y even?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, that's sure. A joke from Ridiculous History.
It's okay. Crossover, extended universe. I think you missed the boat. You should have called it the 13 Days of Halloween.
Sorry, guys.
So we just need to work with more people named Wayne. That's really a takeaway. But the show is great. Do listen with headphones. I think that's a...
Oh, yeah. It's 3D.
It's 3D audio.
It's binaural. It's mm-hmm. creepy. It's like ASMR horror with Keegan-Michael Key and Ben Bolin. There you go. That's the show.
No, well, too kind. If you don't enjoy it, please send an email to our complaint department. As always, that's jonathanstrickland@iheartradio.com. But if you want to talk to us about any of the things we named, if you want to suggest topics you think our fellow listeners will enjoy in the future, and you hate phones, don't sip social meds, you can go ahead and reach us directly, no matter where you are, no matter what time it is. We have a good old-fashioned email address. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.